down to business. Sponsored by Flowgas. On the grid, off the grid. Flowgas is Ireland's only supplier of LPG and natural gas. Wherever you are.
From runners to stilettos, from bargain basements to high fashion outlets, shoes mean different things to different people. For some people, they're an obsession. For others, they're little more than a functional necessity. But regardless of who you are, just of all of us need a few pairs. So you might think that footwear is something of an evergreen market and a safe business bet. But is this the case? And what are the major challenges in the Ireland's footwear industry? On this week's Industry Review, we're talking shoe shops, and we have in studio three dab hands at fitting the foot. They are Operations Manager for Eco Ireland, that's Keith Rogers, Eco Ireland even, Keith Rogers, National Sales Manager for Dubarry Ireland, Paul Corson, and Managing Director of Corky's, John Corcoran. Guys, you're all very welcome to the show. What I'd maybe start with you, Keith Rogers. You're very welcome, and thanks for coming in. Your business was founded by a Carl Tewsbury way back in the 60s, but can you maybe tell us a little bit about Eco Ireland?
Yeah, Eco Ireland, we're in business a long time. The family was, it's a family business that was originally a draper wholesale business that started in a good historical year, 1916 in Cork, right, on the Keys. And over many years, the business grew. Footwear became our primary business. And in the 70s, we came across Eco Shoes. The owner and founder of our company, the owner of our business, came across Eco Shoes in Germany at a trade fair. He bought 500 pairs, and that's where our business with Eco started. And today, Eco Shoes is our entire business. I suppose our business is in two parts. One, we supply the footwear industry, 250 independent retailers across every village, town, and city in Ireland. And then I suppose in the new developments such as Dundrum, Liffey Valley, Blanchestown, we open stores ourselves there. So we have a retail network of 17 stores across Dublin, Limerick, Cork,
okay,
Belfast.
Great. Sound business. Sounds great. We'll come back to the business about being a supplier and competitor, which is an interesting dynamic where you're supplying independents and then you've got your own 17 stores. We'll come back to that in a second. But let me bring in Paul Corson. He's 36 years in the business and he's the National Sales Manager for Dubarry of Ireland. Paul, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thank you, Bobby.
Now, tell us about Dubarry Ireland, a Ballinasloe company. We know them well and synonymous with footwear in this country.
Very much so. Dubarry, well, I'm 36 years in the business, but I'm very young. I started at a very young age. However, Dubarry was formed in 1937. It's a family-owned business. It was a family-owned business. It was set up in very difficult times in Ballinasloe to create employment for local people. The original owners were English. They brought their expertise from the English Midlands, where there's a great history of making footwear.
Right.
And the business has evolved over the years. We've been through every recession and every high that there's been since then. And I think there's been more recessions in the footwear industry than there has been highs.
Right. Yeah. And as you say, the business model has probably changed significantly over the years.
Changed radically in the last 15, 20 years. We've had to look outside Ireland for our business. Our business now is 80% export, 20% home market. We've also developed a clothing business, a bag business, accessories, which is at the medium to high end. Technical product in the sense that an awful lot of it is Gore-Tex lined or Primaloft lined, so you're getting added brand value with other products.
Yeah, and what you say there, Paul, is key, really, the value of brand, and really you recognise the history and credentials of the Dubarry brand, and that's really your main armoury going forward, isn't it?
But we still call on traditional shoemaking, the skills of the individual handmade shoes, and that... that's an important part of it, and the history of the west of Ireland is very much part of our
okay,
our ethos.
Great. Sounds like a great business. I want to bring in an old friend of mine, John Corcoran. He's the managing director of Corky's. John, your business was started with your brother back in the 60s. Bring us back to those days, if you would.
Well, it'd be the 70s. But basically, my older brother went to emigrated to England in the early 60s, and he went into the shoe business there. And he was doing the markets in the Midlands around Birmingham, Leicester, Sheffield, etc. And he started with second-hand shoes,
right?
Part worn. People would have worn them before. And a gentleman came along and he said, "You're a smart fella. You should try new shoes. There's a lot of money in selling new shoes." So he decided to sell new shoes then, for shoes that hadn't been worn before. And he was very successful. So I had just finished college in the mid-70s, the mid to late 70s, and I got involved with him, and he sent the stuff in, and I started doing the markets here.
Did you work in the Dandelion Market?
I worked in the Dandelion Market from 79. Yeah, and really it took off, because most of what were in Ireland were coming from the UK at that stage.
Right.
And we had good advantages because we were in good factories, getting the stuff from source. There was no VAT on clothing or footwear at that stage, so we had to sell stuff very keen.
Yeah.
And we were very successful very quickly. Within a year or two, we were turning over about £2 million worth of footwear from a zero start and no capital.
And then the business evolved then, Capel Street, Talbot right. Street, Grafton Street, as Grafton we all Street. Knew well.
Yeah.
Yeah, so okay, stay with us, John, because okay. Texter's out there, 53106. We've got three experts on shoes here right in studio. The texts have already started to come in. Bobby, I find a lot of shoes have a cushioned insole. I can't use such shoes as I wear orthotics, I think it is. Also, when you find a good pair of shoes, invariably you cannot repair the soles. It's very expensive to get a good pair of shoes that you can maintain. That's from Fergus. Thanks for that, Fergus. Echo Shoes, Keith, a texter says, Connor in Dublin, are unbelievable. A florist and a dog walker on feet for about 15 kilometres a day, they're essential. Used to buy hiking shoes every 4 to 6 months, but now Echo last about 2 years. Great comfort, no sore or wet feet anymore. And that's from Connor, as I say. So there's an endorsement.
Thanks,
for
Connor.
You.
I appreciate that.
Keith, just coming back to the marketing of your proposition. You mentioned there earlier about being supplying all the independent retailers and then having your own 17 shops. Is that a difficult kind of, I suppose, line to balance, in the sense that you're poacher and gamekeeper in some aspects?
Yeah, no, I mean, for us it's very simple. We would love to have all our business supplying our customers, but and we do our best to support them, and we would do our best not to compete directly with them. But you know, the reality of the retail expansion in Ireland is you have shopping centres like Liffey Valley, Dundrum, and all the other ones on the M50 belt, as well as Mahon Point and Dúradán and Limerick, that have grown up. And
have to be in those units.
Well, each of those centres are doing more business than a Cork city or any other city in Ireland. So you're either there or you have no presence at all. So we go in, and what we found, the end result is that by us going in with a branded flag of a store, it expands the profile of our brand. It gives us more exposure, and therefore we're helping our business customers. That okay. is our primary focus.
Now, we've heard of farm to fork, but has anyone heard of from cow to customer? Tell us about that.
Yeah, I suppose our business is simply, we don't want to be the biggest shoe company in the world, but we believe we are the best. And in that regard, we control, we're the only shoe brand in the world, as I understand it, that controls every element from hide to customer, so, or from cow to shoe. So we design ourselves in house. We take the raw hides, we turn them into a premium leather with our own tanneries. We have our own factories where we produce, and we have our own distribution, and we control everything all the
Great.
Way to customer.
Great.
Which gives us great control of our products.
Okay, and Paul, let me bring you back in. Paul, the National Sales Manager for DeBarry Ireland. Just the new business model that we talked about there, do you work through retailers? So the product is now primarily manufactured abroad,
primarily,
and the jobs now that are here in Ballinasloe, that are they mainly marketing and distribution and that kind of stuff?
The Dubarry Ballinasloe is the headquarters for Dubarry worldwide. We have offices in the US, in the UK, in Holland, and then we've sub offices in Sweden, Germany, and then various distributors across a total of about 17 countries. Within Ireland, we have predominantly always been dealing with business, so we've been business to business. 5 years ago, we made a decision that with our own clothing range and our own premium footwear range, that John will allude to this later, the pressure's on independent retailers in Dublin through rents, through rates, through the spread of the multiples, the international multiples, squeezed out an awful lot of Irish businesses through the 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
Businesses like the Rocha stores closed. They weren't replaced with Irish business, they were replaced with international business. They, even though we spoke to some of them at the time, they didn't want to know about an indigenous Irish company. So we made a decision that we had to have a presence in Dublin City, and hence our flagship store in College Green.
Yeah.
And that has been a great success. And following on from that, we've opened in London, we've opened in Cheltenham, and we look at other sites.
You talk about London and Cheltenham, and like, are a lot of your customers yachties and horsey people then?
For that end of the range, the equestrian world, it's a lifestyle product.
Yeah,
it's not a technical product for horse riding, but there's an awful lot of people. And Irish farmers, they'll all have a pony in the corner of a field somewhere. A lot of gardeners wear our products. The yachting side of it is very technical, and we are industry leaders in terms of where we produced a leather waterproof boot for sailors back in the 80s. We led the world in terms of that.
I've worn them for 30 years, and I have to say, there's nothing like them.
Mm.
Yeah, John Corkin, let me bring you back in here. Would I be right in saying that an estimate would be that 90% of the shoes now in Ireland are made in China? Would that be a fair comment?
Yeah, that's interesting. Yes, when we started, Bobby, most of our footwear came from England. Then it drifted down to Southern Europe, Portugal and Spain. You know, and then in the last 10 to 20 years, it's virtually all China.
Right. Yeah. And the in Corky's as well, your point of difference effectively has been looking at the millennials, the younger people.
Yeah. Fast fashion.
Yeah. Tell me about marketing to teenagers.
Well, we do a lot of online media. Also, we advertise on radio stations, not this one, unfortunately, because you're a bit too,
we're too dear, are we?
Well, spin. And
the demographic just isn't right. There's not enough
social media.
Yeah.
We have high presence. Our shops are in high profile locations, generally Henry Street, Dundrum, Limerick, Cork, Ilac. And we're targeting that young teenage game, which is mainly for dress shoes, for going to discos, etc., high heels, etc.
Do they even have discos anymore, John? I'm not sure you're talking millennial language there. Listen, we've loads of texts in. Let's have a look at them. A couple of them, maybe you might help me on them. Why are toddlers' shoes so expensive? My wife paid 65 quid this week for starter shoes for our one-year-old. Literally a six-inch sole. That's from Jimmy. Anybody any comment on that?
Yeah, well, certainly from an Echo Shoes point of view, I suppose the one difficulty we have is it takes the same design, it takes the same effort in manufacturing, and believe it or believe it not, but it almost consumes the same amount of leather. So the only saving that you'll get from an adult shoe to a children's shoe is the fact that there's no VAT on it. But we actually put a smaller margin on kids' shoes than we do on adults to try and keep the price as low as possible.
Yeah. Keith, your history, again, you worked with Penny's Primark for 14 years, again, buying shoes. Mm. What changes have you seen over the years in terms of, I suppose, in terms of what the consumer wants now than in your earlier days at Primark?
Yeah, well, look, for me, retail is a hobby, retail is a passion. I think it's the greatest career that anybody can consider, but I also think it's one of the fastest changing innovative industries in the world. And what the biggest things that have changed in the over the last generation or so is the standards in terms of our stores, in terms of merchandising. Retail has become a science in terms of how we attract customers. Yeah. Service is the most important thing for us as retailers. You have to have the right product. We're lucky that we do. We have a very top quality product, but we have to match that with our service levels in store. And we try, frontline is so important okay. to get it right.
Okay, we'll talk about online in a sec. Let's do a few more texts. Bobby, my wife finds it impossible to find a lady's size 9. Do your guests know where she can find such shoes? Why do so few shops stock size 12? I'm a size 12 myself. I sometimes find difficulty getting shoes. I've been wearing Echo shoes for years. Very comfy and hard wearing. That's for John in Kilmack. It's impossible to find an extra wide fitting shoes, so even in Echo. So there's a few technical questions there around size and width. Anybody like to comment on that? Dubarry, I know, have a
we do cater for a wide range of width fittings and sizes. We do extra wide deck shoes for
Dubs, as they're sometimes known by the cool people.
Is the shoe of choice for the school kids throughout most of the country. And
is it true that some schools actually tried to ban them and they made them even cooler, that the kids want to wear them because principal says you're not wearing those Dubarrys in here?
Some schools did ban them, all right. They didn't like the fact that they had a white sole when they had a black shoe uniform policy. The thing with the white sole is it's not marking anyway, so it's not going to do any damage in the school. So I'm not really sure where that all came from. But anyway, all publicity is good publicity, we say.
John, I want to ask you about online now. Yes. And the prevalence of online. It's no secret that you had your own difficulties on the high street, the shop in Grafton Street, mm-hmm. your flagship store, sadly closed after many years' trade. When you look at all that's happened, John, and again, we talked about the changes in how, you know, footwear is purchased. You mentioned yourself the proliferation of Chinese imports, property costs, all that. Like, were you driven off the high street?
Well, the problem is the lease law. There was a fault in the lease law, really, so you couldn't adjust. So when the rents went up, you couldn't go back down, even though the trade collapsed.
Yeah.
So that was a flaw in our lease law, which isn't a flaw in the rest of the world's people's lease law. So we were an outlier on that, exceptional. And that destroyed most people's business.
And then now you're still recovering from that, and
yes.
I'm glad to see trade is good and things are working well for you.
Yeah.
How do you see it going from here, John? There was the famous guy from the London School of Fashion who said people will never buy fashion online, and he's an after-dinner speaker now because he was the guy who got it so wrong. Like, are shoes something that you need to touch and feel, or are people quite comfortable buying them online and sending them back if they don't fit?
Yeah, I think they are quite comfortable buying them online and sending them back, no question about that. The question is how big that market will grow as a percentage of the total. There's not many stats on it. It's hard to figure out.
It's probably still less than 10% though, isn't it?
Yeah, certainly less than 10% for us. We have an online presence and it's about 7%, say.
Okay.
But I don't know whether it'll continue to grow or it will top out at that.
And have you seen it? Have you seen it grow to 7% fairly rapidly recently?
Yes. No, we're online. Well, say recently, we're online about 6 years.
Right.
So it's been around there for most of that time. And there's a bit of growth there at the moment, but it's hard to know whether it was the bust, the online, or the proliferation of shopping centres that made retailing much more difficult for fashion.
It's probably a combination of all three. And again, the severity of one piece over the other is hard to maybe call, but I'd suggest it's a combination of all three.
Yeah. You asked Keith about the big change. There's probably the biggest single change from our point of view has been the proliferation of sport shoes as against regular shoes.
Yeah, and the sports shoe has kind of become trendy, it's become fashionable. And would I be right in saying that, and again, I'm no expert on this, but would it be one of the cheaper shoes to make, and yet it now commands the highest retail value?
Exactly, you got it in one. Because I remember 40 years ago or so, when we were trading, if you were a very low-income person and you couldn't afford a regular pair of shoes, you would go down to Penny's and buy a $2.99 pair of runners. And that was the cheapest price point in the marketplace.
Amazing. So
those $2.99 runners now have a brand on it and are over €100. So now it's the dearest shoe.
Well, listen, it's a fascinating subject. We've loads and loads of texts in. I don't have time to read them all. I want to thank my guests, Keith Rogers, the operations manager for Echo Ireland, Paul Corson, the national sales manager for DeBarry Ireland, and John Corcoran, the managing director of Corkies. Thank you all so much for joining us.
Down to Business, sponsored by Flowgas. On the grid, off the grid. Flowgas is Ireland's only supplier of LPG and natural gas, wherever you are.